All right, promise number 80. You turn all the lights off except me. Promise number 80. There is a very interesting book that I don't know if it came out this past year, but it has been reviewed in several publications this past year. Israel in the Mind of America. Probably one of the most exhaustive research studies on the concept of the state of Israel and a homeland for Israel and its influence on American thought and American activity to bring it about, I think ever to come off the press. Some little known and remote history is fleshed out. Among other things, one of the pioneer efforts in arousing America to the importance of Palestine and laying foundations for the role that America would play in opening Palestine to the Jew was a preacher named McDonald, who pastored a Presbyterian church in Albany, New York. And the text that galvanized him was Isaiah 18. He too recognized there were some minor differences in the interpretation of some of the verses, but he too recognized that chapter 18 of Isaiah pointed to the role of the United States. I point that out to let you know that the things that I'm teaching have been a part of church history in the thinking of Bible scholars within the mainstream of the church for many years. The torch was picked up by a man named Noah, trained and assigned to a U.S. embassy post on the Barbary Coast, having his appointment recalled because he was a Jew. He then found his true calling and became a voice for the Jew in America. The Jews who listen to me in New York City will remember Noah. He filled Broadway Tabernacle, the largest building in New York City at the time, with thousands standing outside. He too referenced Isaiah 18 on the role of the United States. And yet, I grew up in the church. Nobody ever preached on this chapter. I remember the leading prophecy preacher of the denomination I was growing up in saying, the only place you'll find the United States of America, USA, in the Bible is in the three middle letters of the name Jerusalem, J-E-R-U-S-A-L-E-M. What an ignoramus. I could describe him with a three-letter word better. Promise number 80. Woe to the land shadowing with wings, which is beyond the rivers of Ethiopia. He too understood, Pastor McDonald, that is, that that was simply a colloquial phrase for distant, far off. Here is a people that beyond the rivers of Ethiopia was far, far away. And woe, I've already pointed out in the earlier hour, the Hebrew words hoy, 55th chapter of Isaiah, that translated ho, That's the proper translation. Ho, attention-getting word, to the land shadowing with wings. Whose symbol is the outstretched wings of the eagle? Cup of silver dollar. One of the older ones. Woe to the land shadowing with wings, which is beyond the rivers of Ethiopia, far away, that sendeth ambassadors by the sea, even in vessels of bulrushes upon the waters. Simply put, water gobbling or water eating vessels. A steamship seen in prophecy before it was ever invented. Even in vessels of bulrushes upon the water. Saying, go ye swift messengers to a nation scattered and peeled. Literally outspread and well tended or polished. To a people terrible from their beginnings hitherto. Literally terrible from their beginnings onward to the end. These are the people that Isaiah 54 says, no weapon that's formed against them will prosper. Terrible in their beginning, bursting on the scene with the American Revolution. A nation kneaded out and trodden down. That's where we were when I left off. The land surveys of America were unique. Surveyors walking out the meets and bounds of this entire land, whose lands the rivers have spoiled. Literally, the word is to divide, whose lands the rivers have divided. And the word is a liturgical word, to divide by quartering, the way the priest would quarter the sacrifice. Follow the Columbia River up to its source. Follow the Mississippi up to its source. Follow the Potomac up to where it connects with the Ohio, up to its source. And you've got this land geographically quartered. For so the Lord said unto me, I will take my rest. And I will consider in my dwelling place like a clear heat upon herbs and like a cloud of dew in the heat of harvest. For before the harvest, when the bud is perfect and the sour grape is ripening in the flower, he shall both cut off the sprigs with pruning hooks and take away and cut down the branches. They shall be left together unto the fowls of the mountains and to the beasts of the earth, and the fowls shall summer upon them, and all the beasts of the earth shall winter upon them. Now what does that mean? Well, let's save it. Let's say that. Because Promise 80 is verses 1 through 3 and verses 7. That's it. Now God repeats himself. In that time, what time? When he does the things that he said in verses 4, 5, and 6. In that time, and what's the time? For so the Lord said unto me, I will take my rest. I will consider in my dwelling place like a clear heat upon herbs and like a cloud of dew in the heat of harvest. For afore the harvest, when the bud is perfect and the sour grape is ripening in the flower, he shall both cut off the sprigs with pruning hooks and take away and cut down the branches. They shall be left together unto the fowls of the mountains and to the beasts of the earth, and the fowls shall summer upon them, and all the beasts of the earth shall winter upon them. And whatever that means, which we're going to say, in that time shall the present be brought unto the Lord. A gift is going to be delivered to God. What is that gift? Hosts of people, hosts of a people, scattered and peeled. When God says something twice, pay attention. Outspread and polished. Now, there is an alternative interpretation of those Hebrew words, tall and clean-shaven. We which has caused some people to point out that probably the United States was the first country to field a clean-shaven army. But I happen to believe the right translation in this case is laid out, spread out, and polished. A well-laid-out land, as you would fly across this country with its hedgerows and farms laid out with the meets and bounds and townships and sections. Scattered and peeled, this is the present that is brought to the Lord in the last days. I will tell you that 4, 5, and 6 are last day events, verses 4, 5, and 6. In that time shall the present be brought unto the Lord of hosts of a people. God's a gift to God. He gets a present. A people scattered and peeled from a people, that means the descendants of, from a people. Notice it's a little bit different. Here it's from a people. Up earlier it said, hold of the land shattering with wings, which is beyond the rivers of Cush, literally, that sendeth ambassadors by the sea, even in vessels of bulrushes. Go, ye swift messengers, to a nation scattered and peeled. In the last days shall the present come from a people. And that present is from a people who are terrible in their beginnings, scattered and peeled. A host of people, terrible in their beginnings or from their beginnings, hitherto a nation meted out, trodden underfoot, whose land the rivers have spoiled, literally divided or quartered, to the place of the name of the Lord of hosts, the Mount Zion. Now what this is saying is that this people, shadowing with wings, far away from Palestine, that sendeth ambassadors on the sea in water-grabbing or water-gobbling or water-eating vessels. Now go, ye swift messengers, to this nation, scattered and peeled, a people terrible from their beginnings hitherto, a nation meted out and trodden down, whose land the rivers have quartered into four parts. That is, go to them before the last days. Now, the last days are going to happen. And in that time, verse 7 takes over, shall the present be brought to the Lord of this people, scattered and peeled, descendants, if you will, from a people terrible from their beginnings unto their very end, a nation meted out and trodden underfoot, whose land the rivers have spoiled, to the place of the name of the Lord of hosts, Mount Zion. That's why you read in Ezekiel that the Jew will go to Israel, and together they'll go back to the promised land. Not only is the Jew to return, as is happening in the formation of the new state Israel, but another present will be given to the Lord. Those people that are settled in a place that God promised through the prophet Nathan would be their place from which they'd never move again, which would be a place where their former enemies, the Philistines, the Canaanites, the Edomites, the Elamites, would never bother them again, and they wouldn't have to contend with those same enemies. These people in that place that God reserved for them that is other than Palestine, where David's descendant would rule over them, will be that people, or will include that people, that are these people of the 18th chapter of Isaiah who will be the present to God in the last days. They too will descend on that place that is the center of last day events. I need Mike upstairs and I need Joe down here to find out why my sound machine is exploding over here. Now, who is to be the subject of this people? If it's not the United States, who is it? You don't push it that way. You push it the other way, Peter. Put it up here on this book. Maybe that'll help. Who would you nominate? you people lost in darkness over there. Don't you try to sleep on me either. I mean, if God can fix Plymouth, I'll have him disengage some of your gears if you go to sleep over there in that darkness. We're keeping the place cool by burning me and me alone with the lights. And if you take advantage of my generosity and any snores drift my way, may God make you swallow your plates and chew your own throat up. Whom would you designate? If it's not the United States, let's just analyze it closely. Shadowing with wings. What country can offer the present to the Lord that they will return to Zion also? Beyond the rivers of Ethiopia, far away from Palestine. So big and powerful that they send ambassadors across oceans, by sea, in great steamships. That'd be an important country. A people whose land is characterized as well tended and spread out, not some little old terrace rice paddies of northern Luzon or the coastal areas of Japan, densely populated and highly concentrated in its development, but rather spread out and polished. Their beginning must be terrible, and they must remain a fearsome people. Terrible in their beginnings and remaining that way to the end. And relax, folks. Nobody is going to render the United States defenseless. I mean, some may want to overarm, and some want to unarm. But this people will remain terrible to the end. And they're going to remain to the end. A nation meted out and trodden down. A land whose rivers have quartered it. What would you choose? Mexico? Chad? How about the Northern Marianas? Tristan da Cunha? Antarctica? New Zealand? China? They lay out their land according to geomancy. They got to look out for dragons when they sell real estate. China will not meet all four criteria here. They didn't send ambassadors and water-drinking vessels. They didn't even want to see foreign demons. Russia? They don't qualify. Europe, as a united nation, just maybe, though I doubt the rivers quarter it. Canada? Who can this be if it's not the United States? Tell me right now. I'll be right back. Welcome to Manhattan Cable in New York City. I wish you had been with us 45 minutes ago, because the folks in New York City will remember the Jewish patriot who did so much to motivate America on the reestablishment and return of the Jew to their homeland, Noah. A New York Noah, not the one that floated in the ark. It's a shame he isn't more widely known across America. His funeral, as the casket went by Broadway Tabernacle, and the crowd that gathered to hear him, even though Jewish, speak both Protestant and Jew, were a marvel, probably matched or exceeded only by Billy Sunday. Noah, as I said, was preceded by a Presbyterian pastor in Albany, New York, who was galvanized, as I said earlier, into action by recognizing in chapter 18 of Isaiah that the United States was in the telescope foci of the prophet. Noah recognized that too. And we are in the promises that God has unveiled in his book that help us see his faithfulness. When Isaiah was writing in the 18th chapter, the kingdom of Uzziah had disappeared. He becomes the transition prophet into the days of Hezekiah, whose prayer at his deathbed extended his life for the best years of his life. When all the kingdoms of the northern, or all the tribes of the northern kingdom, and most of the cities of the southern kingdom, Judah, had been conquered by the Assyrian horde and displaced into the territories east of the Assyrian Empire on the boundary with what is now modern Iran, but then was the Medes, and only Jerusalem would stand. And in that period of time, through a telescope of prophecy, Isaiah saw a country, a nation, that has mystified Bible students through the years because of a simple, blind unwillingness to recognize that the house of Israel was never lost, and that the Israelites, so-called of the kingdom of the house of Israel, disappeared. The house disappeared through the Caucasus Mountains at the breakdown of the Assyrian Empire, to disappear, so to speak, north of those Caucasus Mountains around the shores of the Black Sea at the exact same period of history. The Celts appeared. Now, the Celts, or Keltoi, as Herodotus says they called themselves, were considered barbarians by the Greeks and by the Romans. Well, they were barbarian because they were different. They were barbarian because they took heads, for example. Well, so did King David. Read the book of Judges, they're taking heads on all sides. That little bit of barbaric activity was nothing to compare with what went on in the Colosseum at Rome, or Maximus Circus, and what they did to the Christians. Yet the Romans did not consider themselves barbarians. It took the digs at Hallstatt and Latin in Switzerland and in Austria to begin the process that uncovered the reality of the Celtic culture. And as those successive waves moved out of the territory north of the Black Sea to form the northwestern nations of Europe, Germany, for example, the territory was called Germani after a Celtic tribe. As succeeding Slavic peoples began to move in and intermingle, those who settled in the territory were called Germans, but the Germani that gave the territory the name had already moved westward. These Celtic tribes that populated most of the nations of Northwest Europe, including the chieftain Asa, who led his tribes into the Scandinavian regions, whose title gave him the supreme potentate position. And he was called Asa in title, his actual name, Odin or Voden. And he became the supreme ruler. And it's from that heritage we get the understanding that the ace is even above the kings. And the ace is the highest card in the deck. Voden ultimately is deified as the Masagetai. Deify Moses in their godhead. These Celtic tribes that had lost their kingdom, lost their king, and were thrust out of God's care as a people married to him, and were divorced, scattered, characterized as not having God's mercy, characterized as not God's people, traveling many days without a king and without a priest and without an ephod and without a teraphim, without any revelation, without a prophet. Yet, as Amos said, sifted through the nations, yet not a corn or a grain would be lost. These Celtic peoples I offer as none other than the lost tribes. They have every characteristic. They become a people numerous enough to be counted as the sand and as the stars. They become a people characterized with all the traits, breaking into commonwealth of nations and multiplied kings and multiplied nations. Don't tell me they don't look like a Jew. Nobody knows what a Jew looks like. Sarah and Esther both were fair and blonde. David was ruddy and fair. Nobody knows what a Jew looks like. The facts are the Celts appear at exactly the place, already a great people, that the last record of the movement of the lost tribes as a company disappeared. And it has been aptly said, the burial ground and disappearance of the lost tribes is the birthplace of the Celts. If somebody finds the Celts as a body of people in Outer Mongolia, moving westward and crossing the Black Sea area, then I'm going to look for a new candidate. But until somebody finds an origin for the Celts, other than a mysterious appearance, as a vast body of people organized into tribes, moving and living in booths. That's why they're called Scythians. The word comes from scoothes, which means nothing other than booths. Feast of the Tabernacles, the Feast of Scoothes, from which we get Scots. You look in your dictionary, a Scot is a nomad, a wanderer. The Celts, they were scoothe dwellers. Booth dwellers. Herodotus, or Herodotus, the father of history, they call him, the Greek historian, he described them as carrying everything they had in wagons, and taking everything with them as they moved. In successive waves, they populate Northwest Europe to concentrate their settlements in the purest form, in the British Isles and the coast of Brittany. From this little concentrated residue grows the great British Empire. There was a time in Queen Victoria's day when she controlled most of the kingships of Europe. The Tsar of Russia or Germany, they were nothing. They were relatives. She was grandma. That old gal, by her inner connections and family ties, could rule most of Europe. And the greatest empire the world has ever seen, God either couldn't anticipate it, and for centuries, history's at a standstill because God never anticipated what this little bunch of English people could do. The British Ish is man, you know. Brute, covenant. Covenant man. Britain, covenant land. You say, well, I can find some other possible etymological roots for the meaning. Go ahead. I don't care if you call it watermelon field. I got just as much evidence for the root of the name being covenant land and the root of the people being covenant man. I don't build a case on one point. That's why we're at promise number 80. And in the promises just unfolded earlier today, the isles of the sea in Isaiah, and after they've lost the other, additional sons clamber for more land and a chance to go and find a place for themselves because the area of the motherland is too straight for them, too small. Now, the other vine that went over the wall and formed an independence of his own was none other than the United States. Ironically, the punishment time for these children of Israel was 7 times. Among other formulas, a day for a year and a time being a year, 7 times 360. The old Jewish calendar of a year, and a day for a year, 7 times 360 years, 7 times punishment. You get 2520, 2520 years as a designated time of punishment. Manasseh, the half-tribe, is carried away exactly 2,520 years before the Battle of Yorktown that cinched the victory of the American Revolution. And Manasseh's descendants, you follow the Angli in their routings through the tribes, as you can follow Woden into the Scandinavian countries. You will find that the tribe of Manasseh settles in exactly that section of the British Isles that dominate the eastern seaboard and the foundations of this country. Too many streams of truth. But if I had nothing else, what nation do you offer? Shadowing with wings? So 4 waves described as beyond the rivers of Cush? Sending ambassadors by sea and steamships? Water drinking vessels? Scattered and peeled, wide laid out and polished, people terrible from their beginnings, laid out with meets and bounds, a land the rivers have literally quartered. What else qualifies? Who will be a present brought unto the Lord? Brought to the place of the name of the Lord of hosts, the Mount Zion. Now, we know all nations are going to go up to Jerusalem during the millennium. Zechariah makes that clear. Let's go to Zechariah. Just keep your finger in the place there for promise number 80. Behold, the day of the Lord cometh, chapter 14 of Zechariah. And thy spoil shall be divided in the midst of thee. For I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle. And I'll skip over the battle of Armageddon. After all of that is finished, and the Lord shall be king over all the earth, and in that day there shall be one Lord in his name only, verse 9. Verse 16 says, it shall come to pass that everyone that is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall even go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, to keep the feast of the tabernacles. And whosoever doesn't come up, God will put the plague on them. This great nation does not fight against Jerusalem. It's a presence of the Lord. Isaiah 18. that will deliver a host of people to the Lord who will go to Zion to worship. And I repeat what I said earlier, it's tied in with the Ezekiel prophecy where the Jew will go to Israel and together they'll walk back. The new state Israel was not formed because of France. The new state Israel was not formed because of Russia, because of Germany, because of China. The United States and Great Britain made it possible. And it was to Great Britain and the United States that those who wanted the new state Israel, the Jew, had to walk. And together they went back. Simple, and overwhelmingly, as you look at the promises, there is only one people in the world that qualify. Either the atheist in England is right who said God's word's not true because England has fulfilled all the promises God said to Israel, and since England's not Israel, therefore God's lying. Or the alternative is blind idiots that we may have been, we better look to the pit from which we were dug. Abraham was our father, and Sarah was our mother. Well, then, am I supposed to start worshiping God like a restored Israelite? No. Nope. When you see God's handiwork and His control on history, let faith mount up with new wings of eagles to know that what God has promised to the church, based upon a covenant made with His Son, has so much more security if we could be relative in those things than the covenants here reflected made with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. If God will keep His word and will, as He said through Isaiah, I will be glorified through these, you were my servant from the womb, how much more will He keep His word based upon a covenant made with His Son and sealed with the blood of His Son? That's the reason I teach on it. I don't want to return us to some archaic Hebraic worship. That's where I would part company with the British Israelite sect. I want the knowledge of what God has done to keep His word of promise to people that didn't deserve it, as a people, to strengthen the faith of the Christian, that he can hurl himself hilariously into the promises of God to those of us that receive all that Christ has obtained for us. We'll rule and reign throughout eternity, over and above all of this final outworking of the promise to the nations, Israel and Judah. But to see God do this with Israel and Judah is to make me know He will do what He's promised His church. That's 80. 80's a new beginning. I got about 70 more, if you're interested. Now, I want you to talk to me for a while.